Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And I see we're not rusty after the time off.
Right.
So tell us all about your towel, Lyle. I'm sure the audience is all a titter.
Yeah. Well, as a way to cheaply soundproof my recording
head?
Space, which is my head, I decided to just put a towel over my head last time we recorded. And it fell off when I got up to go to the bathroom or something, and it accidentally hit the space bar, stopping the recording, which I did not notice.
Who would have thought a foolproof system like that could go awry?
I would not have expected the towel to actually have enough weight, unless it was a super big one.
It's huge! It's got to cover Lyle's whole head. Sorry, that was cheap.
I'm just glad you said it first.
So that is the towel.
Riveting.
All right, 2 minutes of the podcast down.
But Wayne actually played X-Wing.
Yeah, that's right. The previous Sunday, finally got a chance to play X-Wing and found out that I'm not incredibly good at it.
There.
Either that or I was just really good at it.
Yeah. But you liked the game, right?
Yes, I did. Felt like a miniatures game, which I like miniatures games. But
I'm glad that this miniatures game felt like a miniatures game.
All right, my bad. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I didn't say that very well, but I thought it was pretty good. Fantasy Flight did a good job of cleaning up rules that commonly come up with miniatures games or other issues. But, I mean, you can't clear up all of them just because it's the nature of a miniatures game. Like, those measuring sticks that actually have the different kinds of movement, such as, like, turns and quarter turns. Yeah, they were nice, but sometimes when the ships were really close together, like, you couldn't get them in there to, you know, align properly. But that's just the nature of any miniature game, I think. Overall, I thought it was really good, though.
That's cool. So since you're a big fan of War Machine and Hordes, how would you rate it compared to X-Wing? Or rather, X-Wing compared to that?
I'm thinking. I don't know. I'm trying to give an honest answer that takes into account the amount of money I've spent on War Machine.
That doesn't count. I just want to review the game.
Yeah. I guess the real benefit of X-Wing is it's easy to learn and really simple to teach. Much more than War Machine. So yeah, that's definitely a bonus. And you don't need that many ships to have a decent game. Like, I think I ended up playing three games over the course of the day. One was with 4 to 6 ships to a side. Actually, they were all that. So, and those were pretty decent sized games.
Yeah. That sounds good. I can't wait to try it myself. Someday.
Yes, has all your stuff arrived, Lyle?
All my X-Wing stuff?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I just need a carrying case for it. And time to unbox that Fantasy Flight stuff.
Oh, so it's actually still in the box.
Yep. Yeah, we were playing with Matt.
Yeah, that's true. But I assumed you would have, like, ripped your stuff open and taken it all out.
The second it arrived, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do.
Yeah, usually I do that, but this time, just because there's so many little pieces, you just want to just wait till you have all the container to put them in, set up.
When I was a little kid, I had this big Darth Vader suitcase thing that had all these different compartments for all of the little figures in there. That'd be awesome to have for this.
Yeah, I had something like that as well. Every one little slot each for the action figure.
Yeah, exactly. Memories.
I had the Death Star.
Oh, that jealousy.
Yeah, with the big tower.
How cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I had, I think, a turret from the Death Star.
Oh, you mean the cardboard dome thing?
Was that it? I remember, like, a big plastic gun that a figure sat in, and I never realized what it was until ages and ages later.
Oh, okay, so, like, that came off the set or something?
I that's what it might have been. Like, I got almost all of my Star Wars stuff from garage sales, so it wasn't odd for me to have a piece of another one, but... Yeah, I think that might have been it. Like, actually, just the gun platform out of the Death Star set.
Oh, wow.
That's all I could do is shoot. I suppose that's all the Death Star could do.
Yeah, really. What else does it do besides shoot?
Wayne ordered a Core Fate from Kickstarter.
Yeah, which is weird, as you guys both pointed out, since we didn't really, or I didn't really like the fate system when we played it before. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of odd that you want to buy a game that you don't really like all that much and don't intend on playing.
Oh, well, I figured it...
I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I'm proud of you for supporting the game and then the designers, because I think it's a great game, but it is kind of confusing.
It was, as you said, more I like the designers who worked on it. That was a factor. And I don't know, I figured I'd give it a chance, since I also wanted to see what they did to genericize, if that's a word, the system, since this is supposedly, you know, this is like the GURPS toolbox of fate. So, and enough people have backed it to where I'm going to get a lot of stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, Fate Core looks really good. I actually saw kind of the skeleton version of it before they had started the Kickstarter project. So it's good. It integrated a lot of the design that they put into Dresden Files. So it's a much more updated and, I'll say, better system than the previous iterations of Fate. So, yeah, I mean, it's as a person who likes Fate, I think it's a great buy.
I'll be happy when it arrives so I can, like, leaf through it. And I don't know, kind of thought it deserved another chance. And, yeah, why not help Sweet. Fund the project? So I think Lyle thinks I'm throwing away my money.
You made me order the Fret Stash for you.
Yeah, it was $50. It comes with dice.
Yeah.
And
which you aren't going to use.
Yeah. It's now a hardback book.
Yeah, $20 for 4 dice.
All right, and the signature.
Ooh, the signature, wow.
Oh, well.
You know, I thought I was a negative one of the podcast. Jeez.
It was kind of funny, though, that you're talking about how much you like the designers, even though you don't like anything they've done.
That's not true. I mean, the designers are like, they've worked on other stuff that I like.
I keep buying this person's CDs. One day I'll like one of their songs, I hope.
All right, smart guy.
But I like him on talk shows. He's pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. He wears
hope
a suit like nobody
a
else.
CD. All right, all right. Point taken.
Yeah, people are just going mad about that. And mad about the Pathfinder Online? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the Pathfinder MMO, which I didn't contribute to. And probably won't. Because
you like Pathfinder?
Yes, because I like Pathfinder, so of course I won't contribute to the Kickstarter.
Now, how come not?
First, it's an MMO, and I'm just not really all that interested in computer games and MMOs. So. Mm-hmm. And also, like, this is going to sound kind of crappy, but their delivery date is 2016. So I know it takes a long time to develop a game, especially in an online MMO, but that just seems a long time to wait before you see any kind of return on the money you put in.
Hmm. I guess so. I had a look over it. It seems it's another MMORPG. It looks like fun.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be a sandbox, isn't it? As opposed to other ones that are quest-driven?
Yeah, but I'm actually wondering how that works and what that actually means. Because, like, if you compare it to the D&D MMORPG, the D&D one is pretty, I don't want to say limited because that sounds negative, but the scope is a lot smaller than, say, like World of Warcraft, in that you join up and you either go with a team or with a random group of people and you kind of just do a dungeon run. There isn't, like, wilderness and cities and the traveling between them. World of Warcraft is much more like that, like a sandbox style. But just like you said, there's lots of different quests that you go on, kill 10 boar and things like that. So I'm wondering if they mean something more like World of Warcraft, where there still are little quests, or if they mean it's completely open, in which case it's kind of hard to envision how they're planning to do experience and leveling up.
Yeah, I don't think you could do it completely open, because then what would people do? You know, it's an MMO. There's no GM there throwing out plot hooks. They would have to program quests.
Exactly. You know? You'd have to hire literally millions of GMs in order to handle all the people in RPGs. So obviously there has to be some kind of quest or experience mechanic, but who knows what it is?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just imagine it's going to be a version of World of Warcraft. It'll be similar to that, but that's just speculation.
Yeah, just with like a Pathfinder IP skin.
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm thinking, too.
But who knows? I mean, the Lord of the Rings MMORPG, that came up with some pretty interesting stuff in the way you time your attacks to build up combos with people that you're playing with. So that they did a pretty interesting take on it. So who knows? Maybe they've got something really cool and new to go with?
No idea.
Lyle hasn't touched a mouse in 3 years.
Yeah, not interested. Mm. Yeah, I'm not really sure about the IP property.
Right.
Yeah, but that's only just because I have the main rulebook and I haven't actually played any of the Pathfinder adventures or their campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Pretty popular, so yeah, you might actually do it. Well, it seems like a rather ambitious goal.
Well, I mean, it's possible. You know, that one Monte Cook one, Numenera, they only wanted like $20,000 for it, but he's already up to $500,000. So there's people out there who want money who are willing to spend money for these things.
Yeah, I'm sure part of that was the name Monte Cook, you know?
Yeah, I don't doubt it. But I mean, reckon if this thing takes off, this Pathfinder MMORPG, then this might be the nail in the coffin for D&D.
I don't know, you think so? Because, I mean, it's an MMO as opposed to a tabletop role-playing game.
Imagine if there was a hard book version of World of Warcraft, though. Just how many geeks would buy it on name?
Yeah, there was. It was called D&D 4E.
Well, exactly, but it didn't have the same name.
No, there was a D20 World of Warcraft game.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then I take it back.
It didn't do very well. Then they also tried a card game. It doesn't seem to be much crossover.
I mean, if you're a fan of the MMO RPG, then you're going to play that. And if you kind of like tabletop games, then you're going to do that.
Yeah, I suppose the only real crossover is for people like me who don't get to game as much as I want to, so I fill the gap with WoW.
Yeah, and
I cry the whole time.
Yep, and Blizzard is hoping you eventually make that full transition over to the dark side and just play MMOs.
Unlikely. I've been at level 20 on the unpaying version for about a month now.
You still playing?
No, not really.
Yeah, I think it makes a difference if you got friends playing with you. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then it's just... I don't know, you don't really want to play with, like, 13-year-olds and things like that.
Yeah. Or creepos on the internet who try and hit on you.
Yeah. I think D&D had a good advertisement about it. They said, if you're going to be an elf, you might as well do it with friends.
Yeah, I remember that ad campaign. Yeah.
All right, today, so we're going to do a review of two games that are using the same engine or same system. First game is Monster Hearts, and the second one was Dungeon World. I won't have much to say about Dungeon World. I didn't play that one.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, too bad.
So first up is Monster Hearts. So Wayne, you want to explain what the setting is there?
Sure. So the setting for Monster Hearts is essentially modern day, but it's supernatural, teen horror romance? I guess along
Buffy.
The lines of... Yeah, elements of Buffy. I'd say more like a teenage True Blood or Vampire Diaries or... Yeah, even Twilight, which I'll say real quietly. And supposedly there's a new Teen Wolf TV series.
I got Jennifer's Body vibe from that game.
Yeah, that was good source material for the game as well. I would much prefer to say that as a movie to watch for this game over Twilight.
Yeah.
So the idea is the default setting is everyone has to play as a teenager in high school who is also some form of supernatural creature. Either werewolf, vampire, ghoul, ghost, or the monster slayer, kind of like Buffy, as Chris mentioned.
Several times.
Yeah. And the system is?
The system is Apocalypse World, or it's based on the Apocalypse World system, although there's some major tweaks to it. Every outcome that has uncertainty in it has three outcomes. Either you get everything you want, you get something with strings attached or a complication, or you totally botch it and something really bad happens to you.
Just for reference, we did Apocalypse World, the campaign of that as a review on episode 73, if anyone wants to check that out as well. So yeah, for the Monster Hearts game, I really, 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 really liked it. It was, in fact, I think it completely overshadowed the Apocalypse World game that we did, and was a lot of fun. It had a lot to do with the setting, playing like this emotionally... uncontrollable teenager was so much fun. Just kind of being able to be immature, I guess more so than usual. But also it had kind of that supernatural element, which I've said dozens of times before. I loved kind of that hidden world supernatural genre. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I think part of the setting is, I guess, twofold. One, I think as an MC, I learned a lot from the mistakes I made running the Apocalypse World game. And made sure that everyone was on the same page when we started Monster Hearts. So that was one. The other one is, I think it's a little easier to wrap your head around the Monster Hearts setting because, unless you say otherwise, the default is modern day, kind of mundane, hidden supernatural world, as you said, Chris. And you don't really have to make any assumptions other than supernatural creatures are real, because all the other assumptions can just be actual real life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could totally change the setting and play in a different time period, but default setting is current, real world.
Yeah, no, I liked it more than Apocalypse World. And, yeah, I guess maybe because it is easier to get into, maybe because it is just the one shift from modern setting. But I think there was a really tangible setting to grab onto.
Mm-hmm.
So, we list all these different movies, and you could say, like, okay, but we all kind of get it. You know, right. Supernatural romance in high school.
Yeah.
And then people can do variations of that, whereas maybe in the, I guess when you say post-apocalypse, there's just so many different routes you can go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and even the characters just kind of added to the flavor. I mean, they all seem to be pretty closely tied together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just the kind of the sex mechanics and, or what are they called, sex stunts?
Sex stunts. I like sex stunts better, but they're sex moves.
Yeah, well, when I do them, they're stunts. the sex moves in that, it just seems to fit with a game called Monster Hearts, whereas the sex moves, it's not like people don't have sex in the post-apocalypse, but yeah, you know. Yeah,
you take off your rags and haven't showered in 2 years. Come on, baby.
So, can I just clarify, when you say the characters fit together better, do you mean the characters we created for the Apocalypse World and Monster Heart games, or are you talking about kind of the character classes or archetypes that come with the games for players to choose from?
Well, both. Like, as a review of Monster Hearts, I thought you can see them all fitting into the high school. Maybe just because the setting is so confined.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then it's easy to see how they fall into place. Whereas Apocalypse World, it seems like you go a couple directions. You could go in kind of the nomads. You can go, you know, in a settlement, and you could be like really out there, really mundane, all these different things, which is great if you want to present a lot of variety for the players and different directions to go in. Whereas Monster Hearts, it was like, yeah, everything is really built around that one solid core. And what we did for the game was we decided to make sure that we were all friends we really embraced the different tropes of that genre. And one, you know, how the people are friends from junior high school or elementary school, and then they kind of drift apart as they become different types of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And played on that. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, in both senses, the characters are a lot tighter in Monster Hearts. As you said, it's kind of like laser focused on high school supernatural teen romance.
Mm-hmm.
Where Apocalypse World is, yeah, as you said, Lyle, post-apocalypse is such a broad genre and so many things can happen that the characters you can choose from in Apocalypse World mirror that. Part of the thing I like about the characters in Apocalypse World is each playbook brings a little bit of the setting with it, and I really like that concept. Like, if someone chooses the chopper, like the biker gang leader, well, now there's a biker gang in there. If someone chooses the Hocus, who comes with a gang, well, now, or a religious kind of following, well, now there's a religious cult in there. But that can also be kind of confusing, because if people choose these playbooks that bring a lot of disparate elements, and you look at it and you kind of say, okay, how am I going to make this all work together?
Psychic motorcycle gangs, oh no.
Yeah, exactly. Psychic religious motorcycle gangs. Yeah, so it is definitely something you could, or you should, talk about and be aware of, where Monster Hearts, the characters don't really bring pieces of setting with them. They just kind of bring tropes with them. Like, you kind of have to decide, well, what happens to vampires when they're hit by the sun, or the ghosts? Can they take physical form, or are they just intangible? So there are kind of like all these choices and questions that are attached to the Monster Heart skins, but they're much more internal and only about that character.
Oh, no, in addition to that, I think that Whereas the Apocalypse World playbooks, they bring some setting together so that you can build on the setting with it. Monster Hearts, it's more that it brings stories into it. For example, the ghost character in Monster Hearts, they have this... let me go back a step further. The Monster Hearts system has something called the Darkest Self, which is kind of where you give into your monstrous nature. For example, the werewolf wolfs out into a werewolf. The ghost, they turn invisible and intangible. No one can see them or hear them. It's kind of like that repressed teenager feeling, you know, where nobody cares about me, nobody knows me, I just wish I could disappear. Well, the ghost actually does disappear. And so that's built into their character then, this kind of, there's something wrong with them that they feel this way. And you can, of course, make it whatever you want it to be, but it just opens the door to that whole area of being a teenager to explore.
Yeah, I heard in another podcast that after playing Monster Hearts, someone suggested that the skins could really be examples of personality disorders or kind of the things that happen in high school. As you said, like, The ghost's darkest self, they turn invisible and intangible, and it is the nobody cares about me, so I'm going to disappear. Mm-hmm. Where someone said, like, the ghoul, because of the way the stats are and because of the moves they have, are kind of the disaffected, I'm too cool to be here, so I'm not going to engage with anyone until I find something I like, and then I'm going to be really manic about it, kind of almost bipolar kind of character. And, yeah, I think if you look at the skins, and you can almost... I don't know if I want to say they're personality disorders, but some of them come kind of close.
Well, it's like we said, you are playing a stereotype of one of the roles in a teenage drama. One of the skins in Monster Hearts is the queen, where you play kind of the queen bee, the really popular leader of the teenage, or leader of the cheerleader group or something. Of course, it doesn't have to be the cheerleader group. You can do whatever you like with it, but it is that character. Getting a little bit into the system of Monster Hearts, there was one thing about it that I really liked. Actually, I saw it kind of as an improvement on Apocalypse World. And that's, that there weren't any, any sensing moves in it. Okay, basically, the way the game breaks down, and I'm sorry, we went over this in Apocalypse World as well, but you have a few different kinds of moves. There's only about a page worth of them, and it's, for example, combat, or it's to run away, or it's to try and read a person, something along those lines. And one of the things that I didn't like very much about Apocalypse World was that when you try to read a person or to read a situation, they give you a short list of questions. Okay, so for example... if you're trying to do a read a situation, the list of questions is, what's my best escape route? Which enemy is most vulnerable to me? Which enemy is the biggest threat? What should I be on the lookout for? What's my enemy's true position? And who's in control here? That can cover a lot, but for example, what if you're walking into an ambush situation and you feel that there might be the ambush happening? You roll on the dice and you ask one of these questions. I suppose my enemy's true position works, but that's assuming that you already know there's an ambush coming, and the rest of them don't really seem to match that. So, I don't know, I don't feel that it really covers all the kinds of situations that really come up when you're actually playing a game, and I think that's a little bit of a weakness of the system. But again, Monster Hearts got rid of that, so I think that it works much better for that system. In addition to that, also part of it is when you do this, it's called read a situation, you have to first declare what you want to do. Of course, you do it narratively for reading the situation. Then you roll the dice. And depending on what you roll, there's a limited number of questions that you can ask. So, for example, on a 7-9, you get one question, which is, for example, with the ambush thing, what's my enemy's position? If you roll a 10 or more, you get to ask 3 questions. And since none of the questions apply, it's really kind of just, I don't know, it just seems like it draws you out of the narrative because you have to decide which questions to ask. But... And it's just unnecessary that the narrative stops for this kind of a move.
I suppose, and I guess it's going to get a little mechanical, but I don't really see that as any different from any other game where your character wants some information, and so you either ask the GM what skill applies, or ask if you can use a certain skill, like diplomacy or bluff or sense motive or something. You roll the die, and the GM would tell you what you get as a result.
Yeah.
It's different, but I think both take you out of the narrative, and I don't think the asking questions in the Apocalypse World-style games takes you out that much more than it does in other games.
Okay. That's just the way that I was feeling about it. I think it's more that you have to choose from this list of questions, whereas in another game like World of Darkness or Dungeons and Dragons, you can ask any question you want and then just apply whatever skill is applicable to it. You don't have to choose from only this certain list. But again, I mean, maybe it's just me.
I don't know. Monster Heart did essentially take that out, but they have a move that is used for getting information that the character wouldn't normally have access to, and that's Gaze into the Abyss.
Yes.
And on that one, on a strong hit, you get pretty clear visions, or you get the information you were asking for. And on a weak hit, you either choose to get good information, but you get a negative condition, or to get kind of hazy, indistinct information. And I don't know, as a GM, I think that one is a bit harder to do, because when you do that move, the player still has to say what information they're looking for, what situation they want to do this about. And sometimes it can be hard to phrase that question, where with the list of questions in Apocalypse World, as a GM, I kind of know exactly what the player wants because they're choosing from one of those lists.
Yeah, you're right. And the Gaze into the Abyss move, I think, you're right. It's harder for the GM to do, but I think it's a better move in general. Again, because it's not limiting.
Fair enough. Can I just point out that no one in our game used it?
Sure, sure. So, yeah, but that was really, as I'm sure everybody heard on the Apocalypse World thing, that was my big gripe about that one. But also one of the reasons why I think Monster Hearts is so much better. Because the Apocalypse World system, where it's that fail, succeed with complication or succeed, that base mechanic is so good. It's really it's a genius piece of work. So I hate that there's something that I don't like about Apocalypse World, but Monster Hearts cleaned that up, and yeah, I'm all for it. It's one of my favorite systems, I think, now.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a very social system, like a very narrative system.
Mm.
So I think Monster Hearts is a very, very social game. All the interactions,
mm-hmm.
what they do with the different monsters and how those, I guess you could say, disadvantages or challenges that they have are really well done. The special abilities, overall it's like really good.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the way that Monster Hearts handles social combat. Yeah, for lack of the term, social combat, because they introduced that strings mechanic, which I think is really good.
Yes.
Strings represent how well you know a person or emotional leverage you have over that person. And certain moves allow you to take strings on other people, meaning you kind of have dirt on them or you know how to manipulate them and push their buttons. And you can spend strings. And as Lyle said, it's a very narrative game, so the players are heavily encouraged to say what they are doing or what their characters are saying to show they have this emotional leverage over their target. And you spend these strings to get sometimes a pretty hefty bonus,
mm-hmm.
where you can spend a string to offer a character experience to do what you want.
Yeah. And they don't have to say yes. It's great.
They can say no to the request, but they're turning down a point of XP, and you only need 5 or 6 to advance in Monster Hearts, so that's like 1/5 of a level in D&D, essentially. I think it deals really well and cleans up those problems with trying to persuade a player character.
Because
how many times has that come up, and it just doesn't work? The mechanics kind of fall apart, because, as we said before, mechanics kind of represent what the character is good at, but you don't want to take away a player's free will, and this mechanic doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want you to go over there and do this thing, and if you do, you'll get an XP. Your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, things like that, it really represents like kind of the capriciousness of a teenager, and that's kind of that environment. So it sounds like there's 3 thumbs up for Monster Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
And Yujiro played with us, and I believe he was a fan of Monster Hearts as well. I enjoyed that. And it is pretty contained. I mean, it is still high school.
Mm-hmm.
So what do they say? Like, limits inspire creativity?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's what you need. Sometimes when you can have something that's just too big. So the world is just too big or too open or too generic. So you have no limits in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that was the big failing of Apocalypse World for you, right, Mel?
Yeah.
Sorry, that sounded really negative. Sorry, that was the part that you didn't like, you liked least about Apocalypse World. There, that sounds better.
Yeah, no, I guess they were trying to have their cake and eat it too, I suppose, or they were trying to really capture what it's like to be in the post-apocalypse, like really depressing and very Spartan and bare, but then also they have all these like strange characters. So, like, which kind of a post-apocalyptic game do they want to be?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a generic game, but it's kind of trying to tackle a, maybe even kind of a generic genre, you know, since you can plug all these different things into it. And yeah, my feeling is you really have to sit down at the beginning and say, okay, what kind of game are we playing? Maybe even before players choose their playbooks for Apocalypse World, and or have the player pick characters that will kind of, you know, fit into the setting everybody creates rather than, you know, trying to shoehorn people in.
But I think a genre game can be quite deceptive. Like, if you sit down and you've got GURPS or basic role-playing, like something that's just very, very generic, then that kind of forces you as a game master and forces you as players to really talk about what kind of game you want to play with using the system.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes when you have like a generic fantasy game or a generic superhero game or a generic post-apocalyptic game, it has the illusion that you've got a really defined setting when in a lot of cases it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So sometimes you might get started and then you realize that you have about three different ideas of what kind of fantasy game you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, you guys then played Dungeon World recently.
Yeah, well, I suppose you ran it, Wayne, so give us a rundown on Dungeon World.
Oh, Dungeon World, okay. Well, so yeah, Dungeon World, it tries to be kind of old-school D&D just with that Apocalypse World engine, kind of the idea of you have moves that are triggered by fiction and sort of that three-tiered total success, success with complications, or failure that the Apocalypse World engine kind of brings. And I think it's, as you said, well, it's kind of, even though you didn't play, but you said generic fantasy, and that's what it is, because that's kind of my opinion. That's what D&D is, kind of generic fantasy. I think I kind of butchered that, didn't I?
No, that's fine, that's fine. Yeah, I'm sorry. I honestly didn't like it all that much. I was really excited about it, again, because I like the Apocalypse World system at its base. But I don't think that Dungeon World sells itself as being like a fun, quick dungeon crawl kind of experience. But I don't think that the mechanics suit a dungeon crawl very well. And also a few of the different kinds of rules that they used just didn't seem to play all that well, specifically the way the magic worked. And also they had the same kind of trouble with Apocalypse World in the like figure out a situation or read a person, that kind of thing. I think they called it, what was it, discern reality?
Yes.
Yeah, it was that same list of question things that at least I didn't like very much.
Well, but, I was going to say, sorry to cut you off, but
let's go for
to
it.
Be fair, I ran you guys through a dungeon, right? I snagged an old school D&D module because the game recommends just throwing the characters into a tense situation that they'll have to go through. So this one requires prep a little bit similar to more traditional games, at least for that first session, and even though it's called Dungeon World, and even though I threw you into a dungeon, it's really no more of a dungeon crawl than regular D&D is.
Yes, which I thought about. Maybe I thought maybe it was just the situation, but, you know, as a D&D-esque fantasy, and they even give the title Dungeon World, I mean, it's going to have fighting in it. And, I mean, if as a D&D game, there's usually a combat at least once per session. Of course, not always. It depends on your campaign. But again, especially the magic really seemed to be lacking. Let me give an explanation on that. The way a magic spell works is almost the exact same as in D&D. It's the Vancian system. You choose a certain number of spells per day to cast. But it also works in the Apocalypse World mechanic, where if you roll a 10 or better, the spell goes off without a hitch. You don't lose it. If you roll a 7 to 9, three things can happen. You can choose among them. It's either you lose -1 on all magic for the rest until the next time you rest, or you lose the spell, or you attract attention, or some kind of dangerous thing happens. In this game, there was it seemed kind of like, since you're doing commonly a combat situation, that's when you're going to be casting these spells like magic missile and whatnot, then attracting attention basically just means more combat. Or you can get the negative one or lose a spell, which is a really, really big hit for a spellcaster, especially because they don't have kind of a secondary backup for this. It seemed pretty disappointing that the spells seemed too limited. There wasn't much to do as a caster after you did your first spell. In addition, because you had like only a 40% chance of casting your spell without some kind of trouble happening, which, you know, under 50% is kind of just a losing bet.
Yeah, fair enough. I did point out before that the Vancian system in Dundrell isn't that bad, because all you have to do is rest for an hour. And unlike other games like D&D or D&D Next, they don't put a limit on how many times you can do that per day. Like, D&D Next says you can only have 1 8-hour rest per day, and after that you can charge up your spells. So you do get your spells back quicker.
You're right. It is easier to get your spells back. But I think it was also a bit of disappointment, because having experienced Monster Hearts, you know, where if you roll that 7 to 9, something bad happens. You could have so much fun with magic with that. You know, your spell goes awry or some kind of weird effect happens, but they only give you these three things to choose from, and they're not really that great of choices. At least they're not very interesting, I find. So I think maybe I had much higher hopes than it actually turned out.
If you have like things where magic goes awry, I'm not sure that'd be so much fun. If you've got a mixed party, I can see something like that working well with in a game like Mage, where everybody's playing like a magic user and like magic is what the game's about. But I mean, if you're the one magic user in a group of four players, and like, yeah, you could have a lot of fun with the spells going awry, but not if it's only like one quarter of the game. So yeah, and maybe that's another difference between Monster Hearts and Dungeon World, and I didn't play Dungeon World, of course, is that in fantasy you want a variety of characters, whereas in Monster Hearts they're all kind of like different shades of the same type of character.
Right.
So
yeah, everybody in Monster Hearts is messed up.
Yeah, I can see your point, how it could be pulling the spotlight too much, but again, my big complaint with it is the list of effects that they have when your spell doesn't go right is too limiting and not that interesting.
But I'm kind of surprised because, or not surprised because I knew you were going to say that, but like, yeah.
So unsurprised.
Yeah, so unsurprised, but
I've been fighting all week on email, by the way.
Yeah, as usual. I'm trying to rationalize, because on the one hand, you say the information gathering moves in both Apocalypse World and Dungeon World. You don't like how they are a limited list of questions you have to choose from. Because thinking about what you said about you can have so much fun with magic going awry, well, a 7 to 9 is still fundamentally a success. So one way you could do that is to provide a list of things that happen, such as, you know, I think the Forgotten Realms box set, when you entered an area of wild magic for D&D 2nd Edition, right, there was a table you rolled on, and it said what kind of effect happened. It could either be, like, doubled or halved, or your spell could turn into flowers, or, you know, it could be super effective or something. I mean, that's one way you could do it, but
so house rule it?
Yeah, I mean, you could totally do that, but and house rule it with this list of things that could potentially happen, and then the player picks one. But my feeling is, as rules light as these games try to be, do you really want a table you then roll on?
No, not at all. Please don't misunderstand. I would prefer if there was nothing there at all. If they said on a 7 to 9, your spell is a success, but with some kind of side effect or problem. And like all the other things, like when you fail one of your Defy Danger or Hack and Slash, when you fail one of those, it's up to the GM or other players or even yourself to come up with that negative effect.
And take
those rules away.
But my point is, like, if you like the Defy Danger thing where a 7 to 9 means the GM is going to give you a hard choice, that's in the cast a spell move? That's the 7 to 9 pick you attract unwanted attention.
Yes, I got that. So in the Defy Danger move, that's what you do, attract unwanted attention?
No, a 7 to 9 means, okay, I have to give you a hard choice, an ugly bargain, or a worse outcome.
Why couldn't they do that for the magic, is what I'm saying.
they do in a way, because attracting unwanted attention means that I, as the GM, am then going to do like a soft move, put that character in danger that they'll have to react to or suffer the consequences of kind of the next time it's their turn to go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm not really seeing the difference. And if you're saying I don't like these other two options, losing the spell or taking negative one to your spell casting, why not then just always choose, put yourself in a spot?
Here's an example. I was casting a light spell in the game, and I failed the roll, so I chose that attract unwanted attention. As we were in a dungeon situation, that means encounter. Enemies come and attack me. Next scene, we were going down a flight of stairs. The stairs were slippery, so we did the defy danger roll, and Wayne came up with a hard choice. You can either...
You completely failed it.
Oh, yeah.
You completely failed it and ended up at the bottom of the steps.
Right, it was fall down the stairs by yourself or fall down and take somebody else with you, something along those lines. The choice wasn't fail this roll and then more monsters show up. But if I had tried to cast a spell on that staircase and failed, more monsters would have shown up. That's pretty much all that move does. Monsters show up, right?
I have to say yes, because I can't really think in those situations I can't think of anything else that would qualify as attracting unwanted attention. To me, that always says maybe not combat, but an encounter will happen. So
exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that having that negative connotation with a 7 and 9 is bad at all. I think that's a great part of the system, but I don't see why they couldn't have done something like they did with the Defy Danger. If you fail your spell, the GM offers you a hard choice or some kind of consequence instead of just you attract attention. I think they've over-limited that part of the spell casting.
Okay.
So I'll add to that again. Ha! But, all of those things said, I do have some criticisms about the game, but I would like to give it another shot, maybe as a non-magic casting class.
Well, you certainly did well enough with your hack and slash moves that you didn't really need to cast
this
magic.
This is true. And there wasn't any problem with the combat in that system. That was a really fun part of it, too. Because, again, of the 7 to 9, you succeed with some consequence. There's lots of fun stuff going on, like hammers getting stuck in the mud and things flying up and blinding you for a turn. All kinds of really good stuff.
Again, not to get too technical, but that happened on a miss. On a 7 to 9, what happens is you do your damage and the enemy does its damage back to you. Unfortunately, the things you went up against had, like, really crappy attacks, and you guys had fairly decent armor that usually resulted in one or two, or more often no, points of damage on you guys.
Okay, well, then you ran it well enough that I didn't notice the difference, and it was just fun.
Ha!
Yes. So, yeah, like I said, I'd like to give it another try, probably as the Thief class. That one looked interesting.
I gotta say, yeah, I'm not too excited about it. I'm not sure if I want to devote the time to the game. Well, I don't know, if you play fantasy, I mean, there's different types of fantasy you can play, but there are a few good systems out there, and I don't know, it really needs something that could handle magic and fighting. Mm-hmm. And if you say that it has trouble handling fighting, I mean, that's kind of a big part of a fantasy game.
Yeah, I don't know if it had trouble.
I agree.
Handling fighting. I think I just threw crappy little monsters at them that did nothing.
Yeah, and as a side to it, we played with Yujiro as well, and he couldn't make it tonight, but he wrote up a long post on Facebook that we all just kind of ignored. Hi, Yuji! And he was really, really a big fan of the game, and he said that for him, he wouldn't want to do this for a campaign, but if he was going to do like a one-shot dungeon crawl thing, he said this would be the go-to game. And I'd have to echo that, too. I think if you just had some friends over and you wanted to get your dirty dungeons on, then this would be a great way to do it. Because the character creation is a lot of fun and goes through really easily and quickly. And because it's the Apocalypse World system, the characters and the GM kind of collaboratively put together an adventure. So it's could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is one thing you're supposed to do. Like, you're supposed to just kind of... I think next game, if we ever played it again, then I would probably push you guys for more information or have less of the map prepared. Like I said, I just grabbed an old D&D module and I had everything, a map, that I was going on, and all I did was kind of stock it with appropriate dungeon world monsters. But I think next time I would just try and freewheel it a little bit more and just come up with stuff on the fly. And as you said, part of your problem was with those kind of information gathering moves, where maybe, okay, you search for a secret door. Yeah, you got a strong hit. So, hey, there'll be a secret door there. And I'm just going to have to make up on the spot where it leads and what's behind it and go from there.
Yeah, and I think that's the way to do it, because that's the strength of this whole Apocalypse World system, that, you know, you make it up, it's totally sandbox. So, might as well run with it.
Though, doesn't sound like I'll get a chance to try that. At least not with you two.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I got an idea. We'll play Monster Hearts, and your characters all have to be part of the D&D group, and then we'll play Dungeon World in the game.
It's like a game within a game, man.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to go thumbs sideways, but leaning on a thumbs down for Dungeon World.
I have a feeling you'll give a Dungeon World a thumbs down just on page count alone, while the book's 400 pages.
Which is another thing. For this thing, it's supposed to be such an easy one-night throw-together thing, and it's bloody 400 pages.
To be fair, a lot of that is, like, monsters and stuff, so.
Okay. That's valid.
Not it's sold, like that, says Lyle.
It's like that maid game you found, Wade. There's this game out there where you play maids, like out of a Japanese anime, and that's the whole system setting and everything for it. But the book is like 200 pages long.
Hey, there's a lot of random tables in that book.
I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone listening wants to play Dungeon World, you got to know someone who will run it and some people who won't play it.
Oh, I didn't tell you guys, but I'm getting... to completely change the subject.
Still about games, though, right?
Yeah. My brother's getting me Champions Complete.
Ooh, nice.
Like, we had the review copy, and I'm going through it. Yeah, it really, really follows the old Champion system pretty faithfully. So I'm actually going to get the book. It's going to be pretty cool.
Very nice.
And you'll be running it?
Oh, I'd like to, yeah. Get that together. Just got to refresh myself on what the rules are. Character creation is still... It's a point buy, pure point buy, so it takes time. So,
am I allowed to give it a thumbs down review just based on the fact you guys don't like my game?
Sure, Wayne. That's fine.
Yeah.
I played Monster Hearts and like that. I didn't.
All right,
I didn't play Dungeon World. I just thought, man, it doesn't sound like something I'd like.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I love Monster Hearts. Like I said, it's one of my favorite games now.
I wouldn't say Monster Hearts is one of my favorites, but I did enjoy it. I think that's the type of game that this engine... is good for.
Does well?
Yeah, it does well. It does, kind of like what Core Fate is trying to do.
Right.
They'll say, oh, here's cowboy superheroes or something. I don't know if you noticed the latest stretch goal is some sort of, I think, cowboy, no, yeah, yeah, Western superheroes or something like that.
Mm.
Yeehaw.
Yeah.
But, the one I thought sounded cool was the kind of mashup of French courts with mecha.
Yes, things like that. Like, I think that's what this engine can really fuel is you pick like a real like a genre, and then you go like a real subgenre of that.
Mm-hmm. Some of the most fun we've had playing games is doing that, choosing these little tiny genres for the Blaxploitation one game we played. That was awesome.
It was Cosmic Patrol. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that genre choice that made the game.
Yep. And I think it seems in these narrative games, yeah, when they do that, they just really narrow it down, because you don't really need to, and if you have like a thin rule book, like 400 pages, come on, for like a narrative game. So,
yeah,
so I'd be interested to see if they decide to do other things like that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Oh, you mean
really
Fate
anything
Core?
Else?
Pardon me?
You mean Fate Core? Because the stretch goals are hitting, aiming to be a pretty thick book too.
No, well, I was actually talking about the Apocalypse World engine.
Oh, okay.
But I think whenever I see one of those broad genre world, you know, like fantasy world, Apocalypse World, then I think I'm not going to be too interested. But if I see something really narrow where it's like Monster Hearts or something like that, then yeah, I'd be into that.
Hey, I got Monster of the Week. X-Files.
Yeah.
Supernatural. Is that also Apocalypse World system?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep. That might be all right.
Yeah, I could give that a shot.
Is that like X-Files, or is it like Supernatural?
It's X-Files, Supernatural, a little bit of Buffy.
Okay.
Basically,
is the title actually Monster of the Week?
It's actually Monster of the Week, and you are
awesome.
the archetypical monster hunters. So,
oh, I still want to play that.
Every session is you uncovering a mystery, figuring out the monster's weakness, then going and kicking its ass.
Oh, man, I've wanted to run that game so badly. After we did our Vampire and Ghosts casts, I really wanted that kind of game. That's awesome. I'm so happy.
All that research. Yeah, made me want to go kick some monster ass.
Research rules.
Yeah, maybe I'll try running that one next time.
That would be awesome.
All right, that wraps up our review of Monster Hearts and Dungeon World. So I guess that was a solid thumbs up for Monster Hearts. Pretty mixed reviews for Dungeon World. I didn't play it, but
sounds but like I'm gonna give it a thumbs down anyway. Yeah.
We have a pseudo thumbs up from Yuji too. So
yeah, just put my thumb squarely on the downside.
Decisive, I like it. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or you can stream it through iTunes or Stitcher or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can also post comments right there on the website, or put them on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter, or just send us an email, because we always love hearing from you. Oh, and the forums, too. We've got forums. Join the forums, because forums are awesome. Yeah. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.